Togo, a West African state on the Gulf of Guinea, is known for its palm-lined beaches and hilltop villages. But it's also known for its political situation, where President Faure Gnassingbé wants to remain in power indefinitely, and he comes from a family that's been in power in Togo for over five decades. That's more than 50 years. And guess what? The young people are protesting. Gen Z has come out into the streets. Online, Dr. Paul Kariuki, Executive Director of the Democracy Development Program and convener of the African Policy Circle. Dr. Paul Kariuki, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Shafiq, for having me on the show, and good afternoon to your listeners.
It's interesting we're talking about a Gen Z protest in Togo. Exactly the same thing is happening in Kenya right now. And lots of other African states are also very uneasy because the young people of Africa are tired.
Exactly, as you correctly say, there is a new wave that is going through African continent at the moment, because of this generation that feels severely excluded and honestly not engaged in the country of their future that they want to build together with the older generation. And that has constantly created this antagonistic relationship that is now coming up as a protest, and the discontent is becoming dangerous from one wave to the next, as we saw recently in Kenya, and a few months ago we saw the same trend moving into Uganda and Ghana, Nigeria and Mozambique, and now Togo. And the contesting issues are the same in all these waves of protests by the Gen Z. It's about their socioeconomic conditions. Is there high levels of unemployment among young people? It's a high levels of exclusion from policy and decision-making processes about development in their country. It's a heavy-handedness of government every time that these protests flare up. And of course, serious human rights violation. Those are the running themes across these countries wherever these Gen Z protests come up. So it's raising a big question around how do African political leaders want to engage with this generation, because they cannot wish them away. Somehow, somewhere along the path, they must find ways of engaging them so that they can coexist and together build their nations.
Now, although Togo is an agricultural country, and agriculture doesn't guarantee that you're going to have a high GDP, but surely it is a disgrace that Togo is one of the most underdeveloped West African countries. It's in a very wealthy, rich region, but there's no excuse for it to be underdeveloped, is there?
I agree with you 100%. It actually enjoys a very favorable climate conditions that really would support agricultural production in a way that it actually can earn significant incomes for the country, and use that incomes to develop other parts of the economy that can create job opportunities for young people, and even feed herself without relying so much on external investors to come and give them, support that they need to be able to be economically active. So there is a case of mismanagement to some extent. And of course, I think the other issue that is a bit of a thorny issue in that country at the moment is this long dynasty of the family that has been, in leadership, as you correctly said, for almost 50 years now. At some stage, the new generation says they need to see a leadership that is evolving, a leadership that is current, and a leadership that is in tune with, democratic practices. So that has been an underlying, kind of a pent-up pressure within the country. And with all the challenges of economic growth and, the insecurity challenges around Western Africa, the country still has a lot of potential to become a real economic powerhouse. But these contextual issues that have not been addressed over time, they're becoming now an impediment to their own development.
It's sad in a sense. The Gnassingbé family has seen Togo as its personal fiefdom. And I often ask myself in these cases, if the family 50 years ago had embarked on development programs and actually looked after the interests of the people that they were ruling, President Faure Gnassingbé today wouldn't be facing protest in the streets. But because the family's done nothing, this is where we are. You wanted to say something.
That's very true. And I want to say that this is what is really hurting some of these countries on the continent that are really espousing this dynasty politics, because it really stifles development to a very great extent, and it isolates the government from the people, because everything now becomes very family. It also becomes very, personalized, in the sense that the ruling family becomes the architect of the government's development agenda, which often, as we know, and from the case studies we've seen on the continent, is often not pro-people, in the sense that those poor people within these countries feel even the more marginalized from the center of development. And therefore, it's no excuse that after 50 years, the country remains very poor, with chronic underdevelopment, with poverty, poor people, the number of poor people increasing in the country. And of course, the other developmental indicators like access to health, access to education, become even more and more far removed. What we are seeing is increasing in maladministration, things like corruption, things like human rights violation and such. And I think the challenge here has been, there has been no developmental transformation thinking in trying to bring the country to par with the rest of the world in terms of development. And so this new generation that is coming up that is unattached to any political sentiments from the past, they are saying, no, it cannot continue like this. There has to be some stage. There has to be a change. And their willingness to mobilize themselves and willingness to pay even some of them the ultimate price is very much insightful to say that there is no political leadership that is going to survive without being tested if they are not going to ensure that they are inclusive and they are delivering development to the expectation of their citizenry, and of course supported by good governance. I think it's a pity that a country with so much potential like Togo has to go through this kind of a trajectory. And of course, at the end of the day, it's young people who have a bright future, lots of potential and capabilities that are not yet tapped, that have to pay their ultimate price for things like this, which really makes it very sad.
No, it certainly does. And there's another question that arises from these governments that stay in power for so many decades. And this is something that I have personally seen in Zimbabwe, where you had Robert Mugabe in power for so many years, and you've got Mnangagwa there now. But as you discover, it's not necessarily the leader himself or herself that becomes the real problem. It's those under the leader who benefit from those circles of patronage. They become the big problem. Do you think this is something that we really need to watch a little bit more closely?
I think so. It's very important, because in the current setup of our world today, there has to be institutions that do support, firstly, in my view, the ethos of a democratic society. This is a democratic society that is really in the best interest of its citizenry and not the opposite. The other thing is also to ensure that those who are leading together with the leadership of the country must be also people that are interested in entrenching developmental agenda of the country that is pro-citizens and not for their interests. The unfortunate situation in our continent, in most countries that, are experiencing serious political upheavals, is that you find those closest to the political leadership of the country are the ones who are actually stifling processes. And this is not going to go unchallenged, not with this generation, because they are coming from a point of view to say, it cannot be about the country without us. But even those who are becoming gatekeepers to development and gatekeepers to resources that need to be prospering the rest of the country, they are going to be faced severe challenges from this generation. It's not going to allow them to do that. It's an unfortunate situation, but it has to be challenged. Otherwise, if it's not challenged, it will continue perpetually and put their lives and many millions of young people and their families and future generations in cycles of poverty that cannot be, they cannot be able to emancipate themselves from. So it is an unfortunate leadership conundrum in our continent, that you find those who sometimes closest to the political leadership and decision makers actually become the problem in terms of translating a national agenda, development agenda into reality.
Yeah, and just very quickly, I'm looking at the country's economy, and there's a dependence on Europe. 35% of the imports come from France and the Netherlands and Germany, in effect, up to 40 to 50%. And only 5% of trade with the rest of Africa, and then 4% with China. These are dynamics that have to change. I'm sure you'll agree.
I agree 100%. It cannot be business as usual when a country with such levels of potential has to look elsewhere for its economic survival and development, with such a high level of youthful demography that is exposed to all global headwinds as far as economic development is concerned. And therefore, for example, a facility that like ACFTA, that the African Union is trying to create an opportunity for African countries to trade with each other and do business with each other, a country like Togo needs to really rally up her support to look inward, meaning looking into Africa first before looking externally. But again, this goes back to the leadership. If the leadership of the country is not sensitive to the issues that are really threatening its own survival, then you can tell there will be no political stability even in the near future. It's an unfortunate situation because there's a lot of potential within the continent. There's already platforms that the continental leadership at the African Union is already setting up so that African countries can begin to trade together, can be able to start doing development together with an understanding that this continent cannot be developed by external actors. If it has to be what it should be, it has to be led by Africans doing what they need to do because they understand their context better. We have seen lately, for example, Botswana has decided it's going to open its borders to African countries around the SADC region. And so Kenya has also done, with all the problems going on there, that you don't have to have a visa to go into that country. So these are kind of things must be embraced by all well-meaning African leadership to ensure that our continent is able to tap into its own potential and create its own history of development that is truly African. Otherwise, anything falling short of that will become a disaster in the end. And so I would think that the Togolese political leadership needs to look into their architecture of what they see as a developmental agenda that is for Togolese people and by Togolese people, and start looking into African countries and use the platforms that are there to start creating relationships that can promote her economic growth and development. Otherwise, she's going to be left behind.
Indeed, and because we are from Africa and the people of Togo are brothers and sisters, we do hope sincerely that that country can come right and that leadership can go and retire and the young people of Togo can be given a chance. Dr. Paul Kariuki, Executive Director of the Democracy Development Program and convener of the Africa and Policy Circle, thanks for joining us on African Mirror. We'll be here same time next week, different subject. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much, Shafiq, for having me on the show.